passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We are back. Great to have all of you here. And even though Alabama off this week, there's already a buildup for next week against LSU. We even asked Brian Kelly about that yesterday, and he was happy to answer. Let's get to this headline. Never retire, Nick Saban. Why Alabama football needs him more than ever. Blake Topmeyer wrote those words. Blake joining us now. Blake, thanks for the time. And this season taken a dramatic turn in favor of the Crimson Tide. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, sure has. I mean, when we think back on that Texas game in week two, I'd pretty well left Alabama for dead, frankly. They struggled in that game, and you thought about the challenges ahead of them with this schedule. College football playoff, I thought, was off the table. Thought a trip to Atlanta was off the table. And, you know, now we've seen a talented team improve along the way. Hasn't always been pretty, hasn't always been polished, but it's sort of a two steps forward, one step backward with this team. And they are resilient. And here they are coming into November with a puncher's chance at the SEC West. In the pole position of the division. And if you win your division, that gives you a shot to get to the college football playoff. Will they make it there? I don't think so. But when we think back on week two of this season, I'm not even sure we'd be having this conversation at this point.
No, it looked pretty bad. It looked even worse the next week when the quarterback situation was thrown completely
right
up in the air. Mike, you talk about Nick Saban, and you know everyone will make a big deal a week from tonight. He turns 72, whatever that means. I was with him Saturday morning and doesn't look any different. He seems to be coaching a little more comfortably than he has in the past. What are your thoughts in relation to where he is right now, what this season means, and really, as you address in your column, the future?
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like what we're seeing from Saban is a 180 of what we saw from him during the off season. I mean, during the off season, quite frankly, I found him a little bit insufferable. I think we saw the worst of Saban. We saw grumpy Saban. He was grumbling about the effects of NIL, bemoaning Alabama's possible future schedule, and even engaging with this ridiculous idea that because Alabama would have been favored over TCU, it somehow got snubbed from last year's playoff. I thought we were seeing the grumpy side of Saban, and you could buy into the idea that this evolution of college football just really wasn't for him. And then the season arrived, and it seems like a weight has been lifted off of his shoulders. I mean, it really seems like he enjoys coaching this team. He's smiling. I mean, we saw him shove a cigar in his mouth and really soak in the moment against Tennessee last Saturday. And, you know, there's two schools of thought on this. I think there are some camps that believe that this is a 71-year-old coach about to turn 72 who maybe has taken his final tour and is enjoying the ride. I'm not so sure about that. I think, you know, some of this offseason narrative that this sport's not for him anymore. I don't know. I mean, I think he's still enjoying coaching. I think he knows that this isn't one of his best teams, but I think he's really getting a kick out of their resilience. And in April, I might have bought that this ride is winding down under Nick Saban. I'm not so sure anymore. And I also think, as I wrote, Paul, if you're Alabama, I think you hope that this ride is not coming to the ending point, because as I look at the list of potential heirs, potential replacements for Nick Saban, if and when that time comes when he retires, I don't see a very deep list. I don't see a lot of obvious answers that you could just plug in there at Alabama if he decided to hang up the whistle.
You had a very artful paragraph about some of those who would at least be mentioned. Go through that list and offer your thoughts.
Yeah, if we would have done like a preseason water cooler talk, right? I mean, Dabo Swinney's been on that list forever, but you want to see someone who looks out of touch with the current state of college football, I would suggest that Dabo looks far more out of touch than the 71-year-old Nick Saban. You know, I mentioned James Franklin. I mean, okay, hire James Franklin if you never want to win another big game. I mean, James Franklin, yeah, he hums along at 9-10 wins every year, and he loses all the big games. Dan Lanning, an exciting young coach, but, I mean, just think about Dan Lanning going for a fourth down at his own 34-yard line while coaching Alabama. I mean, just imagine that image, Paul, of Alabama fans seeing their coach go for fourth down from the 34-yard line. That's not happening. You know, Coach Prime, I mean, he seems to be attached to, like, every school out there. But, you know, Deion Sanders is the one coach who's more full of himself than Dabo is. And I don't see that going over at Alabama. So, again, you start checking off the names off the list. I mean, Kirby Smart's not walking through that door. I even mentioned Steve Sarkisian. I think Sark, it's still early days at Texas, but I think Sark could do well at Alabama. I do. But would you leave all the riches that Texas has for Alabama knowing that your task is to replace the irreplaceable? You don't have that at Texas. I mean, that is a daunting pressure. Ron Zook could tell you all about it, right? Others could do the same. Ray Perkins could tell, you know, the late Ray Perkins could tell you all about it. It's interesting. I was talking to Lane Kiffin, it's about a year and a half ago, about the hypothetical, just the general sense of replacing it at Nick Saban. And Lane said, quote, "That would be the dumbest follow ever." Now I would counter that with Lane would be the one guy brash enough to do it. But again, I think the hijinks that play well for Lane in Mississippi, it would drive folks bonkers in Tuscaloosa, much like the fourth downs in your own territory would drive them bonkers. So as I look around, I mean, Alabama's best option is for Nick Saban to, you know, sip on the fountain of youth, I think, and march on for as long as he wants.
Blake Topmeyer with us from USA Today. Blake, you mentioned fourth down. The team you covered before becoming a national columnist was the University of Tennessee. So give us your read on the health of this program after another bitter loss on the road in the SEC.
Yeah, it's interesting. Two things got a lot of focus in that loss, the officiating and Tennessee going for fourth down. There were some missed officiating calls, but, I mean, and we're not even going to get into that. That's as my once colleague John Adams at Knox News wrote, complaining about officiating is the loser's lament. So let's not even go down that road. But the fourth downs, I was in the camp that didn't really have a huge problem with Josh Heupel going for fourth downs. I think you, as I've written before, you got to beat Nick Saban in Alabama with touchdowns, not punts and field goals. That doesn't usually get it done. So I was fine with the decision to go for fourth down, but my goodness, what do we got to do to get college football coaches to spend 15 minutes a week practicing one of the best plays in the history of football, which is the quarterback sneak with a couple of fat guys pushing your quarterback behind him? I mean, we see the Philadelphia Eagles have perfected the tush push, and so many college coaches just don't even consider it. You got 6'5", 250-pound Joe Milton, and you're sticking him 6 yards away from the line of scrimmage in the shotgun on fourth and one. I just don't get it. And Josh Heupel's not the only one who does it. There's a lot of college coaches that would never dream of running a quarterback sneak on fourth and 2 feet. But really, I thought, you know, more than the fourth downs, more than the officiating, what that game was to me was one team going into the half with everything in the palm of its hand. But the moment got too big for Tennessee. It did. And we've seen that happen to this program on the road. You go back to last year, losing at South Carolina. This year, they laid an egg in the swamp against a mediocre Florida team, laid an egg in the second half against Alabama. And we know Alabama can do some of its best work when it's pushed into a corner. And I do think Alabama deserves a lot of credit for the way it came out after halftime. But the flip side to that is, Tennessee turtled in the big moment, just like they did in the swamp. And I think the frustration for Tennessee fans is not so much the loss, but it's more so, when is Florida at the swamp going to be more beatable than they were this year? When is Alabama under Nick Saban going to be more beatable at home than they are this year? Tennessee had golden opportunities in those games, particularly at Alabama on Saturday. and they blew it, and they're kind of left wondering what could have been, and not only that, but when, how long will it be before Tennessee has an opportunity this good to win at Bryant-Denny Stadium again?
Blake Topmeyer. Blake, before you go, there's so many other developing stories in the SEC. You have, well, not developing, Jimbo Fisher is a continuum. You have this, you know, Shane Beamer's season imploding. And the one I want to ask you about is Sam Pittman, probably the most liked coach in the SEC, suddenly looking clueless after the game, to say nothing of the 60 minutes during the game.
Right. That was pretty stunning for Sam Pittman to say he froze up in that fourth down situation, which he could have kicked a long field goal, didn't know what to do. And instead of calling a timeout to give himself more time, he took a delay of game and took him out of the situation and had to punt. And, you know, normally when coaches screw up, they don't have the humility or the honesty to admit it. And this is one case where I think the bald-faced truth was maybe not the best option, because all it proved was that, you know, Sam Pittman was out of his element in that moment. So there's two things I think Pittman has going for him in the face of this 2-6 record. And it does look pretty bleak right now, but there's two things he's got going for him. One is that strange clause in his buyout, where if he keeps his record above 500 since the start of the 2021 season, that clause excludes 2020. If his buyouts, or if his record stays above 500, which it's currently still two games over in that span, his buyout would be about $5.5 million more than if he were to dip below 500 since 2021. So that's working in his favor, number one. Number two, we know that every struggling coach has one desperate card in its hand it can play. That is fire the coordinator and pin the blame on that guy. And sometimes that works and buys you another season. And you can only play that card once. Sam Pittman hadn't played it yet until Sunday. He fired Dan Enos. And now, if Arkansas's offense can somehow find some life in these next few weeks, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not sure there's much reason to think it's going to happen. But if that does happen and the Arkansas offense rejuvenates a little bit, Dan Enos becomes the fall guy, and that narrative might work to help Sam Pittman get another season, get another chance to hire an offensive coordinator. Again, you can only play that card once, so even if it does work, Pittman better get his next offensive coordinator hire right.
Blake Topmeyer, great stuff, as always. Blake, thank you. It's just cool to hear your views on the SEC. We'll be back. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, Alabama is on a roll, and you would expect some of the folks who have been hiding under rocks to come out in the light of day. Good afternoon, Jerome.
Hey, what's your name, man? See, I knew that comment was directed to me. You know that. I'm the only one that comment directed to, so I'm going to tell you like this right here, man. You know what, man? Damn you 7 days a week, you hear me? Even on Sunday. Sunday morning, getting ready to church, damn you. In the middle of church service, Fireball, damn you. You hear me? After church service over with, Miss Fireball, come out. How you doing, Miss Fireball? Paul, damn you, on Sunday, period. You hear me? Then you talking to this damn Blake Topmeyer, whatever his damn name is. You going to ask him, is Bama going to the playoffs? He going to say he don't know. When he said he don't know, see, I would have just said click. You hear me? And damn you, too. Because I'm going to tell you like I tell everybody else, baby. Y'all played us for dead. We the wrong one to play for dead, baby. Not Bama. You hear me? I'm going to tell you again. Damn you and the rest of y'all experts for laying us down, covering us up. But you know what, baby? We never was down. You hear me? Y'all covered us up because y'all thought Texas didn't. But, baby, you know what? We back. You hear me? We back. Now, what you got to say about that, Pine Bomb?
That sounds great, Jerome.
I know damn well they sound great. You hear me? You've been popping your damn gun for the last, what, 3-4 months? You know what? You ain't said nothing about Ohio State looking like straight trash. You hear me? You ain't said nothing about Georgia looking like straight trash. Nothing. You hear me? All them lost their top players, and you go by Texas. Oh, they're going to be all right. They got a good back. How you know they back up quarterback? Huh? How you know? Because it's Texas.
Do you know something, Jerome, that Alabama has lost – 4 times since Georgia has lost?
Man, I don't give a damn how many times we done lost in 4 times. What that got to do with today? You hear me? Only thing we worried about right now is
LSU.
Listen to me, Fireball. You know what, Paul? For a long time, I've been wanting to tell you, man, shut up. You hear me? Just shut your damn mouth. I don't want to hear it. You hear me? I ain't the damn Alabama fan you want to talk to, because I ain't finna run jump on no damn rap with no damn rock. You hear me? Damn you. You hear me? We coming to get that crap.
Hey, do you really damn me in church?
Yeah, hell yeah. Doing church, doing collections, Sunday school, Bible school, damn you on Wednesday night, during Wednesday night program, after Wednesday night program, time bomb, damn you, period. You hear me? Period. You hear me? You're the ringleader with this Alabama damn foolishness. You hear me? It's okay. Y'all ride Jalen. It's all right, Jalen. This is what I want you to do, baby. Keep throwing that ball, and this defense got you on PRD lockdown. You hear me? When I mean lockdown, once again, Fine Bomb, damn you, and roll damn ties.
JK is up next.
Hey, Paul, have you ever noticed after Alabama win a few games, this same Jerome that's been in the witness protection program since the last 2 years, all of a sudden he won't call back with his foolishness? What happened today? Did they open the windows, all the doors to the safe house, and everybody ran out with an Alabama jersey on today?
Seems that way.
Oh, Paul, I mean, Paul, since week two, every time Alabama plays a game, it's playoff elimination. And now Jerome wants to call out of the blue. You know good and well LSU is going to beat Alabama, because Alabama is not going to be able to score 40 points. So, and that's what they're going to have to score. But, Paul, I called to talk to you about this NCAA garbage that I heard earlier. The funny part about that is certain teams, certain fan bases, they want the NCAA to punish other certain fans, certain teams, but in the next breath or the next week or the next month, they want to do away with the NCAA. So which is it? I mean, when it was about crab legs and laptops, you wanted those people to get punished, but other schools, you want the NCAA, and you want all of those problems to be handled internally, which we all know means no punishment. But, Paul, I want to ask you this scenario. If LSU beats Alabama and Ole Miss loses one more game, who's going to represent the West in the SEC championship game with all of those head-to-head matchups and losses?
Well,
who's going to represent the West?
That would be LSU.
Why wouldn't it be Ole Miss?
Well, you said if Ole Miss loses one more game.
Yeah.
That would be to Georgia. That would be two conference losses. LSU and Alabama, under your scenario, would only have one conference loss.
Okay, but Alabama beat Ole Miss head-to-head.
Well, but it wouldn't matter. Once you get your second loss and the other ones have one, you're gone.
How many does LSU have?
Well, LSU has two losses overall, but only one in the SEC to Ole Miss.
Thank you, sir. I had the same conversation at work, and for some reason I was wrong about LSU going, but I'm glad you corrected it. But, Paul, you have a good day, man, and I'm still rooting for those Canes, baby. Go Canes.
Thank you. Yeah, they had a big win the other day. Let's Larry is up next. Hello, Larry.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
My goodness. Somebody said, damn you. I'm a big follower of you.
Somebody told me that.
Been following you since, my goodness, 30-something years ago. You in Tuscaloosa. Remember that?
That'd be about right.
Yeah. I'm a big Alabama fan. And you had a call from Jay from Washington, D.C. And had a call from Blake from USA Today. And the truth about Alabama, can I tell you?
Please.
Well, Alabama's improving. We've had a little bit of downfalls. It goes up and down and up and down. But the quarterback's improving, in my opinion.
Yes, sir.
He's improving. We need to work on the offense. If we can keep on doing what we're doing, we can beat LSU. Here's my question to you. What do you think about the offense for Alabama? What do they need to do? And your opinion about the LSU-Alabama game. I know they on a bye this week, but a big one
well,
coming
right,
up.
Right now, I think what's happened is Milroe is more confident. I think the plays are getting better for him from upstairs. The offensive line, while still inconsistent, seems to be getting better during the game. Got better in the Ole Miss game, A&M game, and the most recent game against Tennessee. And that's really important. That line has a tendency to get blown up quickly. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Jim is up next.
Well, I'm just going to comment about what I believe and what I tell you what, Paul, it's not something I could, you know, totally condone as a Christian, but I really, really like Jerome's call because he's right. Blake Bonnemeyer, that's right, Blake Bonnemeyer doesn't know anything. I doubt he could play the trumpet when he was in the band very well. And I heard what Blake said. I wish you'd do away with just about every guest you got on this show, Paul, because none of them, they're all Bama haters. That's all they are.
Jim, who would be the worst? Would that be Brett?
Well, I mean, they're all right. Brett, Blake, Bonnemeyer, on and on, Paul. I mean, there's so many of them. And the ones we like, they're gone now. The ones that, you know, that are good, they don't ever get on air.
Who did you like?
Well, you know I like Tim Brando. I like Danny Sheridan. You know that.
Right.
You stepped into it. You got an answer.
Those weren't like regular guests. I mean, those were specialty guests.
Well, they were specialty often, but they're not even at all on at all now, period. And that's what we don't like.
So I just want to make sure I understand it. You don't like Topmeyer. You don't like Bratton. Who else do we have on here, guys?
Well, you know, what's to like about Bonnemeyer and the Brett? What's to like? All they are is haters. They just hate.
Do you like Griff?
You know how I just thought who I like, and I used to not like him.
Okay.
I really like Greg McElroy now because he knows what he's talking about.
Okay.
I really like him.
Like him.
That's it, Paul. I'm not going to go any further.
We had Cole Kubelik on the other day. You like him?
Well, I don't care for him that much either. I don't care for any Auburn guy. Okay. You know, he's an Auburn guy.
You got Stinchcomb. What about Matt Stinchcomb?
I don't like Doran. I don't like Stinch.
You don't like Doran?
I can't stand him. I don't like Dara. That Dara, little squirt Dara, I can't stand that guy.
Who?
I just don't like them. They don't know what they're talking about, Paul. Like,
I have never
I don't like Dari.
In my 10 years at ESPN, say they don't like Dari.
Now you got the squealing, whoever's doing that.
I don't know.
He did it on Jerome's call. So I'm going to go, Paul, but thank you very much. I'll see you later.
Man. We'll take a short break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
These are the chances to reach the playoff. Ohio State, Oklahoma, Florida State, Michigan, Georgia, Alabama right there with Georgia. So all the talk about the resurgence of the Crimson Tide doesn't seem to be inflated according to this. David Ubben joining us to talk about that and a couple of other things making news. David, thank you very, very much. We are plowing through the season. We're a week away from the reveal, whatever that means, considering Tennessee was the number one team last year. Where are we right now in trying to figure all this out?
We're in full-blown scenario mode, talking about there's going to be 15 undefeateds and the committee's going to be totally kind of up a creek here. These things have a way of settling themselves out. And, you know, you look at the Pac-12, you look at the Big Ten East, you know, they'll settle themselves. And, you know, the SEC's only got one undefeated team left. And, you know, it's projection season, Paul, in looking at what might be in December. And as you well know, it always ends up exactly like we thought from Halloween. So I think we all remember Dak Prescott and Mississippi State starting number one and obviously finishing there and winning a national title at Mississippi State, the legendary moment there.
I do remember them losing to Ole Miss that day in Oxford. Let's talk about Georgia for a second because, you know, they're finally back on the radar this week against Florida, which was also given up for dead among the many we gave up for dead in September. Just your assessment of Georgia without Bowers, and can they survive this brief interim where they don't have their best player.
Well, on paper, you have a lot of weapons. You know, you have Ra-Ra Thomas, you have Dominic Lovett. You know, they've got obviously some good backs in Edwards and Milton and those guys. But it seems like when their chips have been down, they've gone all in on Bowers. And so it's maybe they don't have a lot of trust in Thomas or Lovett, or those guys have not been productive as a lot of coaches and I sort of thought they were going to be. But when Georgia's playing at their peak ability, and I think the first half against Kentucky, we saw a little bit of that. It's tough to see somebody beating them. But we've also seen Georgia playing at their peak, 20% of this season? So Georgia clearly has the most upside. They're probably the close to the most complete team. You could see them winning it all, but you got to avoid tripping up and you got to get Bowers back healthy. If he comes back and he's a step slow and they're down 14 in a playoff game, that scenario makes it seem to me difficult to see Georgia rallying without him.
David, let me get to the story of the day. It may end up being the story of the year, or maybe by some wave of a magic wand, something, it will go away. But that's the Michigan story. How mm-hmm. problematic is this for the Wolverines?
We don't really know. We know that it's made a lot of people mad, and certainly it seems like they've ascertained signals through means that are not allowed. But proving that to the point where they can be punished by the NCAA is probably going to be difficult. And on top of that, proving what Michigan knew or didn't know sort of changes the arithmetic a little bit as well, whether that be in perception or the reality, and filing through the loopholes and the wording in the NCAA rulebook. It's a complicated situation because they're doing something that most places do, but taking it a lot further. And when you talk about the people that are sitting in those seats and holding camera phones, those people aren't explicitly paid by Michigan. So it gets very complicated, even though clearly they're working on behalf of Michigan. And people can say, well, it's not that big a deal, not that big a deal, doesn't have that big an impact. But that's a lot of trouble to go to over 2.5 years if you're not getting a huge payoff for that. And I've talked to some coaches this week that have said, hey, there's a big payoff to this. This is a huge advantage. So what that means for all of this, and I think whether it's reality or not, hiring Connor Stallions and him beginning some of this work certainly runs parallel to Michigan going, 33-3 the last two-plus seasons. It's not a good look. So there's a lot of smoke, and we'll see as they sort of peer through the embers how much of that is fire and what is illegal and what is not, I think, and what you can prove is a very complicated question at this point.
So it looks bad. Maybe it will look worse. So what can possibly happen in the next few weeks that would prevent them from playing for the Big Ten championship and going back to the playoffs?
Well, that's the question. I mean, you're talking about punishments or on the field stuff, Paul?
Off the field, because I don't get it.
Yeah, well, there's no prescribed punishment for this. So the NCAA, and there's not really much of a precedent. So the NCAA is going to have to be, doing this very speedy if it's going to affect this season, which they're not good at that. And they're going to have to sort of, I guess, make up a punishment for this or figure out what punishment fits the crime. But then you've got to answer all these questions about, because to me, it's different if the head coach or a coordinator, somebody directs somebody, say, hey, do this, buy these tickets, get this, get a friend to go sit, versus a low-level staffer doing it on his own. And then it's also different if that guy does it on his own and how many people in the program knew that that's how he was getting that information. Because clearly, based on what we've seen from their sidelines, they had some sign-stealing information. They were using it. But how did you get that, and who knew how you got that, is what you sort of have to prove to prove that it's illegal. And that's complicated and sort of difficult to nail down. So, I don't have a lot of faith in the NCAA, who, as we recall, does not have subpoena power. And if they're going to get electronic records of some of this, you're going to have somebody either give it up or find a way to get it. And that's not always easy, because usually when we've seen NCAA be an effective investigator, it's when they've had a whistleblower or somebody who was motivated to give them everything that they've wanted and needed to get to the truth. And I don't know that you have that here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've had scandals like this before in the NFL. We saw the Astros last night. They certainly had a scandal, but there are authoritative rules where one guy can make a decision and has, where in college football, it seems like the only people with any real power would be the Big Ten. And I'll try not to get you to laugh too hard to think that the Big Ten office would step in here and prevent their best shot at winning a national title from not going.
That's sort of – we're in sort of uncharted territory here. And, you know, you could make up – again, anytime anybody in college sports here is going to be messing around with, you know, playing judge, jury, and executioner and making up punishments, I mean – That rarely goes well. I mean, it didn't go well for Roger Goodell when they've dealt with some of the player conduct stuff, and it doesn't go well here when you don't have, like, the American justice system, for all of its flaws, has pretty defined, if you do the crime, this is the punishment that you face. There is not that here, so good luck.
Well, thank you for being here and trying to enlighten us. It's an ever-changing story. David Ubben from The Athletic, great stuff, and always cool to hear him. We'll take a break. More to come. More guests around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. Great to have all of you here. Lou is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Lou.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Very well.
Good. Hey, listen, man, I just wanted to follow up on what Blake said. You know, people talking about that, going for fourth down and the penalties and stuff. You know, I don't think that's what lost the game for Tennessee. I think that, and you and I talked last week, you kind of shut me. I mean, I was talking about stats, and you're like, Lou, stats don't matter. And I was like, well, yeah, you're right, Paul. And of course, you were right. But, you know, to me, the second half of that ball game just reminded me of Tennessee 5 years ago when they couldn't play 60 minutes of football. I just don't think that they showed up in the. I mean, they obviously didn't show up in the second half because they didn't do anything. So, you know, I don't know.
I mean, they were mostly effective in the first half. Although I thought. They left about a touchdown on the board, which ultimately may have been their undoing. Although they still scored at the end, so I can't say they didn't try to they didn't have a shot at getting it back. But you come out there and the team that is one punch away from being gone scores in what two or three plays, and it was never the same after that.
Well, what do you mean scored at the end? Scored at the end of the first half?
Yeah, the first half is what I meant.
Yeah. But it's like we're sitting here and we're doing our little tailgate on the porch, and everybody's all stoked up and having a good time. And it's like, we got this. I'm like, no, Alabama gets the ball in the second half.
Yeah, that was the problem.
Exactly. But to me, man, I don't think it's indicative.
I think realistically, Tennessee should have been up 24-7 minimum, maybe more.
Well, the other thing too is when Blake was talking about the Florida game, you know, I mean, that was just a total. And you and I talked about that at that game. There were you and I both agreed that there were some concerns about Florida, but you know, that was just a blown opportunity. And then I still don't think Milton's our guy. I mean, he had a great first half.
No, I mean, he's just not consistent enough, and. He's hard to have faith in when the game is on the line. Hey, thank you so much for the call. Brad is up next. Hey, Brad.
Mr. Paul, how you doing, brother?
Well, very well. Thank you for calling.
You looking mighty dapper in that gray suit?
Well, I've got to try to get by on just two or three outfits.
Now, the Navy you had on yesterday was actually, that's my favorite for you, Paul. The Navy you had on yesterday was legit. I'll give you that.
Appreciate that.
So,
yeah, this,
I got
this was
three
my
things for you.
He handed it down. he got this one in the stock market crash of 29.
As long as we don't have another one, I'm good, Paul.
Well, it looks like we may be having one right now, the way things are going, but that's okay.
Three things. I like to thank Nick Saban and the Tide for hanging the L on Tennessee. I'm a Georgia fan, so it gives us a little wiggle room for a loss because it's going to be tough. This next slate we got coming up is going to be tough. I got a good question for you, Paul. Jermaine Burton, wide out for Alabama. If Alabama goes on and wins a national championship, will he be the first player in college football history that has two national championships with two different teams?
Let me think about that. Well, he was with Alabama last year.
Yeah, but he won a national championship with Georgia.
Yeah, so he won. Yeah, so you're saying to win a national championship with two different teams. That's where.
That's you're not, correct.
You're not saying win two national. Yeah. I don't know. Let me.
That's a good question. Yeah,
unless you played for. In the current era, unless you played for Clemson, LSU, excuse me, Clemson, Georgia, or Alabama, I think you would be eliminated right now. So, yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance of that.
I think so. I think there is, too, because that's the first thing I thought of when he left Georgia was he's going to try to win a national championship at Alabama. That'll give him two national championships, one with each team.
Last year he was pretty shaky. He has come on, and, I mean, without Jermaine Burton, I hate to think what Alabama's record would be right now. Hey, thanks for the call. We have Zim coming up with the news of the day. More guests coming up in the next hour. Brandon Marcello will join us.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.